You're listening to Living Lab on The Point. I'm Heather Goldstone. My guest this hour is Dr. Steve Biller of MIT, and we're talking about his recent discovery that tiny ocean plankton produce even tinier, but perhaps equally important, pseudocells, packages of nutrients and genetic material known as extracellular vesicles. Now, Steve Biller, you were talking about the possible functions for these, and you mentioned that these essentially pseudocells could be there as decoys, perhaps decoys that would perhaps almost distract viruses, that virus might try to infect this vesicle instead of actually hitting the cell itself. Could the same be true of the other plankton that would normally be eating, preying on the plankton? Could they be using this as a decoy for predation?
Well, it's hard to know for sure if they're a decoy for predation, but we actually think that they are an important way of moving carbon nutrients through these marine food webs. So we actually looked at the ability of other bacteria to grow using just this vesicle material, and we found that they could actually, you know, take all of the carbon that they needed to grow just from these vesicles. So these might actually be playing an important role just in how carbon is moving through the marine food web after it's been produced through photosynthesis by these bacteria. The whole, you know, there's this huge pool of dissolved carbon in the oceans, and it's really a black box as to, you know, where this carbon comes from and in what chemical forms it takes, and how that carbon moves to other organisms, or how that, you know, what parts of that then, you know, can sink down into the deep ocean. And so we're, you know, we think that this vesicle release is actually kind of opening a little bit of a door into one mechanism that that this carbon can actually be put out into the oceans from these primary producers.
Well, and of course, that whole process is important in absorbing carbon dioxide, the carbon dioxide emissions that we've been putting into the atmosphere over the past 100 or so years, get essentially sucked into the ocean. These phytoplankton take that up, and then it, as you said, moves through the food chain and perhaps, if we're lucky, ends up at the bottom of the ocean and kind of buried there and pulled out of
right.
the atmosphere. So does this discovery change our understanding of that process? Is this something that could even perhaps feed into our understanding of climate change?
Well, it certainly adds kind of another layer of complexity to how we need to, you know, to how we understand these processes. So we think that this is, you know, the carbon in the vesicles has probably been, you know, measured in other contexts, but we just didn't know where it was coming from. And we still have a lot to go in terms of understanding where it goes. So I think, you know, everything we can learn about, you know, the kind of the mechanisms and the more, you know, specifics underlying kind of this, you know, black box of carbon in the ocean, the better we're going to understand to be able to kind of predict how, you know, these big ocean marine microbial communities are going to be able to respond to things like climate change in the future.
Now, in the paper, you mentioned this very interesting relationship between Prochlorococcus and the other bacteria and plankton living around it, where some of them would actually be kind of feeding on the phytoplankton and perhaps on these vesicles that they're producing. But you also mentioned that they seem to somehow kind of get a kickback from having these other bacteria present. Do we understand that relationship?
Well, we have a little bit of an understanding, certainly not a complete one yet. So we've known for a while just in the lab that our Prochlorococcus bacteria grow better. They grow faster. The cultures are more robust when they're actually, you know, contaminated, when there's other bacteria besides Prochlorococcus in the same test tube. And this was perplexing for a little while, but there's one line of evidence that says that actually these other bacteria may be playing an important role in helping to kind of detoxify the environment for Prochlorococcus. So, you know, Prochlorococcus is doing photosynthesis, is producing oxygen, and one of the byproducts of a lot of that type of cellular metabolism are, you know, more toxic forms of oxygen, so things like hydrogen peroxide. So, you know, for us, we always think about, you know, hear about needing to eat, you know, things like with lots of antioxidants like blueberries, things
right.
like that. Those are compounds that can help to detoxify some of these reactive oxygen species that are just a normal byproduct of our own metabolism. But it turns out that most cells have special enzymes that help them to get rid of this hydrogen peroxide, Perchlorococcus seems to have lost that over evolutionary time. And it looks like they're actually relying on these other heterotrophs to actually do this job for them. So that's one potential explanation for, you know, why they kind of like to be around these other bacteria. So it really looks like there's a lot more of a network of interactions, and that, you know, these organisms actually are kind of really relying on each other in these open ocean communities to a degree that we're only starting to appreciate.
So there's a real incentive there for Prochlorococcus sinicococcus to be perhaps producing a food source, something to nurture these other bacteria, but perhaps a food source that doesn't require that they themselves get eaten.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a way of, you know, it's nice to imagine that, you know, maybe they're actually, you know, trying to kind of feed their friends, you know, that they do rely on this greater community and, you know, in this more broad network of interactions that's happening out in the ocean.
Now, what about the DNA, the genetic material that is inside of these little packages? Would there be any benefit to kind of putting chunks of your DNA out there from the perspective of these ocean microbes?
It's really hard to know for sure. Yeah, this is one of those kind of perplexing findings that, you know, it seems like, you know, there has to be some sort of a beneficial reason, but we don't fully understand it yet. You know, the study is really, you know, asking more questions than we've been able to answer so far, but that's an important and, you know, exciting part of science. We have observed, you know, really high rates of gene transfer among bacteria in the ocean. So as we've been able to, you know, have the technology to sequence these microbial genomes over the last, you know, 20, 30 years, we have seen lots of, you know, snippets of DNA in one bacteria that looks very different from the rest, and that we can infer came from a different bacteria. And a lot of that is moving around genes that help these bacteria to grow and, you know, and thrive in a certain, you know, particular microenvironment.
And so, I mean, clearly the process of one microbe, if we use the word eating another, is very different than when we put food in our mouth and it ends up in a very acidic stomach. Could they actually be harvesting the DNA, the genetic material from these vesicles when they take that in?
It's possible they can be taking it up and actually, you know, integrate it into their genome. So that's an area of research that we're really interested in, is trying to look at the dynamics of how this DNA might be moving around between different microbes in the form of these vesicles.
And you mentioned that we do have some evidence of very different, you know, seeing a gene in one microbe that looks really very different and like something completely unrelated. How much genetic information do we have about ocean microbes to know how common a phenomenon this might be?
Well, we certainly have a lot more than we did, you know, even 10 years ago. There's been a real revolution in DNA sequencing. And so as it's gotten faster and cheaper and easier, we've, you know, now have hundreds of microbial genomes available to us that we can look at and compare. And there's been this new field called metagenomics developing, where instead of trying to grow the cells in the lab, what we do is we just collect a lot of seawater, you know, collect all the bacteria that will, you know, fit on a filter, and then we just sequence all the DNA that we can off of that bulk biomass from the ocean. And it's revealed this, you know, incredible diversity of bacteria out there and all these genes that we just have no idea what they're doing in the oceans. So it's still, we've got certainly a much better idea, but we're still far from having anything close to a complete understanding of the amazing diversity out there.
Now, one of the theories of how life originally began is essentially that there might have been pseudocells, kind of like what we're talking about here, something that has a membrane around it that has bits of genetic material, some nutrients, perhaps some enzymes inside it, and that somehow that then developed into cellular life as we now know it. Does this discovery that kind of works in the other direction, and that these can float around free in the ocean and survive and be part of the ecosystem, does this discovery in any way further our understanding of those very early days and the origins of life?
Well, we don't have any direct connection to that yet, but I think, you know, as we begin to learn more about how these vesicles are moving around, it's going to help provide a lot of context and understanding for these types of early cellular models and how different vesicles might fuse, might be very analogous to potentially how things might have happened billions of years ago.
Now, you've mentioned so many questions that have been raised by this discovery. Obviously, as you said, that's the hallmark of good science, more questions than answers. Do you have a sense of what you're going to go after next, what question and how you might do that?
Well, one of the things that we're really interested in looking at is, the control of vesicle release. What's actually regulating this, and how are cells actually packaging things in there? We're really interested in how these little snippets of DNA are generated and how they get released into the cell, into the cellular vesicles, because that might tell us something about really when and where these are benefiting these organisms. We're also really interested in how these are moving around in the ocean. What other bacteria can really access this material, and what are they doing? There's really too many directions to go in, but that it'll keep us busy for quite a while.
Well, so take that first one: how the process is regulated and how it actually works. Give us a little bit of a sense of how you plan to go about answering that question.
Well, what we've seen is that there's a very specific subset of cellular proteins that are packaged into these vesicles. But what we need to do is to get a better inventory list just to start with. We still don't have a great descriptive, comprehensive list of everything that's going in them. So as we start to compare exactly what's in the vesicles versus what's in the cells at a really detailed quantitative level, we hope that we're going to be able to see, some patterns emerging that might, help us understand, where this is actually coming from in the first place. And we're also interested in what these, of those proteins and things that are going into the vesicles, which of those, might actually have some biochemical activity that might be, ongoing as they're released to help the cell actually interact with things, at a distance.
I imagine that this was a fairly exciting discovery. You said it was fairly serendipitous. This wasn't necessarily what you set out to be doing and wasn't the original purpose of the images that even gave you your first hints. Is there right. enough excitement going forward? It sounds like the next step is you're starting to get down into the nitty-gritty and making lists. Is there enough excitement here to sustain a few years of making lists?
Oh yeah, I don't want to give the impression that's the only thing that can be done. There's there's so many bacteria out there releasing these, and in the ocean context, we don't really understand at all really where this stuff is going, what's happening to it, how what beneficial roles these are playing. But there's clearly a lot of carbon moving around. There's a lot of other components, and so it's going to be really important and exciting to see where these things are going and what role these are playing in helping to drive these globally important marine microbial communities.
That's Dr. Steve Biller of MIT. He's the lead author on a study showing for the first time that marine plankton produce extracellular vesicles. That paper was published last week in the journal Science. Steve Biller, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Next up, we'll hear how federal budget cuts are impacting national parks around the Commonwealth and learn what we do and don't know about the environmental impacts of chemotherapy drugs. More Living Lab after a short break.